Brewers are back in town, which means it's time for another Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. I'm Matt Velasquez, and as always, I'm joined by beat reporters Tom Hardicore and Todd Rosiak as we cover everything about the Brewers, especially now that they're back at home. And guys, I think you might have brought the rain with you from the road trip. I think that's the only explanation for it.
Well, we certainly don't have to worry about it stopping play like it did throughout that trip. Todd and me got to experience the same storm system. I had it in St. Louis, and they had it in Pittsburgh. You know your travel schedule's not going your way when the same storm affects you in two different cities.
Yeah, that's for sure. You know, and since the last time we talked, it's been a couple weeks. You know, I'm interested to find out, you know, what storylines you guys have been most interested in and what you're most interested in going forward surrounding the Brewers. So, Tom, why don't you start first with, you know, what's been going on with the Brewers and where you think they're going from here?
Well, probably one of the bigger storylines over the last week or so has been that Ryan Braun hasn't played. He had one pinch hit at bat on that entire road trip. You know, he's got this forearm issue. At first it was described to us as like a trapezius slash arm issue, and now it seems to be more of a forearm strain. So it's going to be interesting to see if he plays in this series beginning Tuesday night against Boston. It's over a week has gone by now without him playing, and if they would have put him on the 10-day DL, which they tried to avoid, it probably would have worked out just about right one way or the other. We're about 9 days in now. Of course, that pinch hit appearance negates being able to do the DL that whole time. But, they've had to make it by without him. And Todd wrote, in the paper Tuesday morning that it's probably affected Eric Thames as well, right, Todd? He doesn't have Ryan Braun batting behind him for a week now.
Yeah, obviously, not having Ryan Braun behind him in the lineup is affecting Thames. That's part one of his struggles over the previous probably 10 games or so. And then, secondly, the book is just kind of getting out on him around the league, and with opposing teams and pitchers, they're figuring out ways to stop him. And, he obviously got back on track in Pittsburgh in that last game, 3-for-4 with a double that was helped by John Jaso's terrible defense and, a home run. He was breathing a sigh of relief in the clubhouse after the game. He was feeling a lot better than he was that morning. But it's kind of been a conflagration of everything as far as him. You know, no Braun, not feeling really well. His body's been feeling a little bit worn down, he said. Team's figuring out where his weak spots are, and he's having to, counteract that. He said he's feeling a hair off at the plate. A tad bit late on his swings. He's fouling off pitches that he was hitting before. So obviously getting him going again, getting Thames going, getting him going at the plate again is going to be big for the Brewers moving forward.
You know, of course, with the way he started, that's the kind of, you know, regression to the mean that we expected, right?
Yeah. I don't think anybody was expecting him to remain on that pace. You know, he even said to me, people were talking about me getting 100 homers and 80 homers. Of course, that was ridiculous. His exact quote was basically, these are just kind of the waves of the baseball season. And Craig Counsell, of course, said the same thing Sunday morning in Pittsburgh. And he, as I noted in my story, he's always one to laugh and roll his eyes when, we're asking questions about guys slowing down. And, you know, he pointed, it's just been a week, or it's just been 8 games or 9 games. It's just part of the season, and he's right. But, you know, hey, we still have to ask these questions. So it's just one of those things. You know, it was kind of in a little bit of a downturn, but, he could just as easily get going again and start hitting. I don't think anybody expects, another homer binge like he went on against Cincinnati, you know, 5 straight days and whatnot, but, he certainly could get going again and get into another hot spell.
Todd, I thought another interesting thing that he told you is he admitted that he might have been spreading himself a little thin on the interview circuit. You know, I kept watching all these shows, radio shows, TV shows, also interviews. I'd start watching them pile up, and I wondered, you know, when is this guy allowed to catch his breath? When does he even have a free moment? And, I saw he mentioned to you that he might have actually spread himself thin, that he was actually tired from talking. You know, and you can talk yourself, you know, a little silly sometimes if you just keep having to do one interview after another. And so he was the flavor of the month there because he was new. You know, so many guys wanted to talk to him, and especially coming back from Korea. And I just thought it was interesting that he admitted that he probably needed to start saying no a little more often. He's such an amenable, you know, easygoing, fun guy that I think he didn't want to say no, but I think he learned that you have to allow for a little personal time as well.
Yeah, I won't divulge who, but I know during that last part of the road trip in Pittsburgh, he actually declined an interview with a very, very prominent media organization, just basically citing the fact that he is exhausted with that, and it's been too much, you know. And not to say that it's affected his focus, and he didn't say that either, but when you're having to worry about talking about all these things and doing the interview circuit on top of all your pregame work and all your workouts and everything, and then playing in these games, I can see where it gets to be a little bit tiring. So he kept a pretty low profile in Pittsburgh. He did speak to me a couple times and to some of the Pittsburgh writers, you know, but we keep those things brief usually, you know, 5-10 minutes at the most. I would expect to see him keeping a low profile nationally here moving forward, at least for a while.
You know, and Tom, you mentioned Braun being out of the lineup and what that's meant for the Brewers. You've also recently written about, you know, how he's gotten those 10-5 rights and what that could mean. You know, maybe you could expound upon that a little bit and share kind of your thoughts on what that might mean for the Brewers.
Yeah, this coming Sunday, Braun becomes a 10-5 player. And what that means is you've been in the major leagues at least 10 years and at least the last 5 with the same club. Now, of course, with Braun, it's been all 10 years with the Brewers. But once you get to that status, it gives you veto rights over any trade. And, you know, he's very close to having no trade as it is, because there's only 6 clubs you can trade him to, without his permission. You know, we've written many times that the Brewers, negotiated late into the night last August 31st with the Dodgers, and then the Dodgers ownership level sort of called that one off. And I think the Dodgers might have touched base with him again in spring training, but nothing serious there. So you can't trade in many places as it is. And then as of Sunday, he would have to give his permission for any trade. But I think it's kind of L.A. or bust for him anyway. He lives in Malibu. He has 2 young children now. He doesn't really want to move his family too far away. So I think Dodgers, maybe Angels, would be about the only places he would agree to go anyway. And he's had a level of transparency with ownership that is highly unusual. They've kept him abreast of any talks. They think they, you know, he deserves that from all the years with the club. And so I think I've been pretty consistent in writing that he's a very difficult player to trade, and that I think the odds are still greatly against him being traded. They do have dual motivation to trade him. One, they don't see much sense and paying a guy $20 million a year during a rebuild, even though their payroll is only $55 million. It's really funny because he and Garza make over half the payroll between him, he and Matt Garza. A very unusual salary structure there. They got a ton of minimum salary guys. And then the other reason is, you know, as we'll probably talk more about in this podcast, they have a ton of great outfield prospects that are eventually going to be ready for the major leagues. And so there is no DH in the National League. If Braun's holding down the left field spot, you know, it stops one of those outfielders from coming up. The good news is he's still a productive player, so it's certainly not a wasted spot in the lineup. He still produces when healthy. So as I wrote Sunday, it won't be the worst thing in the world if they carry him through this season and then try again over the winter. But, you know, at some point there will be a outfield prospect that they'll want to come up and play that position.
You know, and you mentioned Matt Garza and how he takes a bunch of the Brewers' salary for this season. You know, but Todd, you got to see Garza, you know, just this weekend in Pittsburgh, and he was one of the kind of standout guys of this road trip. You know, what's the change been like for him as he's kind of gotten going?
It's been interesting to see because he struggled so badly in the spring. But talked about this plan that he had with the Brewers where they had asked him to focus more on throwing off speed to try to keep hitters off balance rather than relying, you know, almost solely on his fastball and a slider. And, you know, I think it's fair to say that pretty much everybody was skeptical about it, in the spring from the outside looking in. Then he starts the season on the DL. Comes back. His first start was just four innings, wasn't that great, but his last couple have been really good. He went 6 2/3 and then 7 in his last start in Pittsburgh. And while he's not dominating, he's competing and he's looking much better. And that off-speed stuff, it really seems to be working for him. He's still using his fastball, but he's playing off that with the off-speed stuff and it's keeping hitters off balance. Now the outing in Pittsburgh, He was helped by a couple things. Number one was the Pirates' terrible base running, and number two is some really good defense behind him, making several plays, turning several double plays that got him out of jams. You know, and then you can say on the flip side of that he made pitches when he needed to, which is also true. But I think on the whole, if you're the Brewers, you've got to be pretty pleased with the way he's performing at this point, and hope that he keeps doing it. Obviously, it's going to be interesting with Junior Guerra coming back here in the next couple weeks. He's getting ready to throw another live batting practice session this homestand, and then they're talking about sending him out on a minor league rehab for a couple of starts. So he's going to be thrown back into the mix. What happens with that spot in the rotation? You know, Garza's fighting to keep his spot. You know, you've got a guy like Jimmy Nelson who's not been pitching well. What happens with him? So there's going to be a lot of interesting things happening in the next, probably 2 weeks with regards to the rotation.
You know, and kind of sticking with pitchers, Tom, you know, maybe not in the rotation, but overall, you know, who are some of the guys you think have been kind of on the upswing in terms of, you know, the Brewers and especially their bullpen?
Well, especially on this last road trip, Corey Knebel and Oliver Drake just were fantastic. You know, Drake was acquired, in April from Baltimore. A lot of people didn't know what to make of him. He throws a splitter just like Junior Guerra does. You don't see a lot of guys throwing that pitch anymore. And he also comes way over the top. Without a left-hander on their staff, he's in effect become a de facto lefty because he's been so good at getting left-handed hitters out. And they kind of look for those matchups for him. If there's some key lefties coming up late in the game and it's time for the starter to come out, Drake will be the guy they call in. And, he's just been fantastic. He's striking out a lot of guys and he's already moved himself into a high leverage position in the bullpen. And Corey Knebel's just been just ridiculous. What Todd, I believe he struck out the side the last two times he pitched. He's the only major league reliever with at least 10 outings who has a strikeout, at least one strikeout every time up. So, you can't spell Knebel without the K, and that's been pretty fitting for him.
And do you think that their success can kind of translate into the future? What do you see from this bullpen, which I know had been something that we talked about before, as kind of something that we were interested in figuring out what would happen with the season?
I mean, I can grab this one. If I were the Brewers, I'd feel pretty good about the leading up to the ninth inning, you know, the Oliver Drakes, the Jacob Barnes, the Corey Knebels of the world. I'd be a little bit nervous about Neftali Feliz. Maybe he's a slow starter. He's got a number of saves already under his belt, but he's quickly becoming the next Francisco Rodriguez as far as, white knuckle ninth innings. It seems like he's incapable of pitching a clean inning. He's letting guys on base every time, giving up home runs and, making things a little bit more nerve wracking than the Brewers would like. You know, obviously he's got a big arm and he's got experience in those situations, and nobody's going to be infallible. But it's been interesting to watch, you know, those ninth innings unfold, because I think Brewer fans clearly remember the K-Rod days, and while he had quite a different repertoire and, you know, no longer had that big fastball, you know, if you're watching a series of games and he's coming in continually in the ninth inning and letting guys on and, you know, teams are scoring runs and inching a little bit closer, I can see where that gets a little bit annoying. So figure out, you know, if he can square away that ninth inning, start pitching some clean innings, I think obviously the bullpen is going to be in much better shape.
You know, and sticking with the pitching staff, how do you think the Brewers handled, you know, their rotation as well as, you know, their bullpen, and how that all gets affected by rain? Because over the past, you know, couple weeks as they've been on the road, you know, the rain has been a consistent issue. You know, so how do you think they handled that?
Well, they handled the rotation simply by just staying everybody in the line they were already in and the alignment they were in. And so they didn't bump anybody. They didn't skip past anybody. And then the off day Monday, a scheduled off day on the, you know, gave even more rest. So they certainly have a well-rested rotation as they begin this homestand against Boston and the Mets, because, you know, they had one rain out in St. Louis that'll be made up later. Jimmy Nelson only pitched three sterling innings, but only three innings before he came out of the game in Pittsburgh the other night. So they certainly don't have to worry about, having a fresh rotation. You know, sometimes they had this stretch in April where they played a lot of games in a row. And I think you do have to be careful, especially early in the season, with pitch counts and stuff like that. But there's no excuses now going into this this homestand. Everybody should be well rested and ready to go.
You know, and kind of sticking with the rain, obviously that affects the teams in the field, but it also affects you guys. What's it like, you know, obviously you don't have to deal with that at home, but what's it like going on the road and having to deal with that and deal with changing accommodations and all the different things that come with rain delays and cancellations and things like that?
Well, I'll grab that one since I'm the one who's been mostly affected by this, the previous road trip. Now, number one, Tom had that rain out last week in St. Louis. He still had to generate copy and write stories, even though the Brewers weren't playing, but he was able to do it from the hotel, which is nice. I'm on the next road trip, and the doubleheader was rescheduled for the first day of that series next month in St. Louis. So I'm going to have to go back now and change my flight. I need to get into town earlier. And then that creates just a really long, annoying work day. You know, I know people don't feel bad for us because we're covering baseball, but when you need to get to the ballpark at 9:30 in the morning and you're not leaving until after midnight, it gets to be a little tiring. I think anybody would admit that, even though you're watching baseball. And then I'll fast forward to for last Friday in Pittsburgh. I got up at 3:30 in the morning, went to Mitchell, hopped on my flight, layover in Detroit, got into Pittsburgh, got to my hotel, had about 2 hours to eat lunch, grab a little bit of a nap, go to the ballpark, and then proceed to sit through a 2.5 hour rain delay. And then a two-hour and 40-minute game. I think I finally got back to my hotel room at 2 o'clock the next morning and got to bed probably 2:30. So clearly that was a pretty tiring day. And then, you know, to have to really not have much time to turn around, get up, do it again the next day, and then you got a day game on Sunday, it's pretty tiring. So, you know, it's... For us, following the weather and looking at weather forecasts, it gets to be a little bit much at times, especially when we're in a weather pattern like this where it seems like every day there's a possibility of rain. And are we going to play? Aren't we going to play? What's going to happen? Are they going to postpone it? You know, et cetera. It adds stress to our days when we don't necessarily need it. Tom, you've been doing it a lot longer, so obviously you can remember the halcyon days of County Stadium. Maybe you got a couple good stories from back then.
Well, I do remember one year where we had three straight doubleheaders in August, six games in 3 days, and those type of things just blow your pitching staff up. It's just too many innings to cover in too short a time. They now play split doubleheaders most of the time because they want separate gates and keep their, revenue streams going. And their baseball allows them to call up a 26th player to help out in the doubleheader. They usually call up an extra pitcher to give them maybe a reliever who might be able to pitch in both games if necessary. But the bottom line of all of this is that we should just remember how lucky we are that we have a roof at Miller Park. There was a lot of debate when they built it about, should we have a roof? Can we afford a roof? Is it necessary? I think it's pretty evident it's been necessary. The roof has rarely been open in the month of April since the ballpark opened in 2001. And there's 81 games a year where we know we're not going to be rained out. So that leads us to navigate the road schedule and hopefully not get rainouts there. But we know every day the team is at home is Groundhog Day. They can schedule workouts when they want. They can do batting practice the same time every day. They know the game's going to be played. You're not going to have a situation like you had in Pittsburgh where the starting pitcher pitches three no-hit innings and is on top of his game, and then rain comes and you lose him for the rest of the night. It's just a beautiful thing. Looking at it from our point, it gives us a better chance of getting stuff in the paper and online quicker too, because you don't have what Todd had in Pittsburgh the night, that ridiculous 2.5 hour rain delay in the middle of a game. That was almost the length of a game, 2.5 hours within side the course of the game. So you're there twice as long, and we're just so lucky that we don't have to worry about that at Miller Park. And it's one of the reasons why the Brewers draw. It's not one of the reasons. It's the main reason the Brewers draw so well for their market size is people can get on a bus 2 hours away from Milwaukee and drive down and know that the game's going to be played and that it's not going to be a rain delay. And that's what helps them sell tickets. And without the roof, without the roof, you'd have Target Field like that in Minneapolis, a great ballpark that you're going to get wet sitting in quite often.
Yeah, that's funny to mention that. I was talking after that game, and I talked to Jimmy Nelson, and of course he was frustrated with not being able to finish that out with how he was rolling. And while we were talking, Carlos Torres was a couple lockers down, and he jumped into the conversation. And as Tom knows, he's not shy about sharing his opinion about anything. And he quickly noted that all ballparks moving forward should be required to have at least retractable roofs to try to avoid all this stuff. And of course he's looking at it from a selfish standpoint, but it is kind of mind blowing that places like Minnesota don't have that. I get the fact that it costs a lot more money, but I keep using the example of you spend $1 billion to build a football stadium with a roof, and then you build a Target Field, which by all accounts is really a terrific place to watch a game without one, and then you've got obviously two ball teams in Chicago, St. Louis, you've got Cincinnati, you've got all these teams in the Midwest that for 2 months really are fighting this constant battle in April and May of inclement weather. So yeah, the roof at Miller Park is awesome, and from a selfish standpoint, I think we both can say we're very thankful to be able to get to the ballpark every day that they're on a homestand and not have to worry about rain.
Yeah, are there any favorite things to do during a rain delay? Anything that happens there in the press box, or is it just basically sit and wait and twiddle your thumbs?
I did in Pittsburgh. I finished up my work, and I think I sat and watched wrestling videos with Mike Vassallo on YouTube. That's kind of that was entertaining. But yeah, I mean, you hope obviously that the rain delays don't last 2.5 hours like they did in Pittsburgh. Sometimes they do, and then you're just kind of left to your own devices. Obviously, there's you know, you can get up and walk around, grab something to eat, whatever. But more often than not, I just find my blood pressure rising and just getting more annoyed with each passing 15 minutes, half hour, hour, because that's time you could be spending finishing your work and going and living your life otherwise. So I don't know if Tom's got any other rain delay secrets maybe he did that he's done over the years. You got any?
Not really. I mean, unless you have like some other story you're working on that you can catch up on, maybe I'll work on a column or something like that. But yeah, you're basically just killing time. It ruins the atmosphere of the whole game too. Anybody that stuck through the rain delay on watching the game on television in Pittsburgh, they come back and there's like 30 people in the stands, you know, it's like playing an inter-squad game in spring training. There's nobody there watching. It's probably still you're worried about injuries or guys going to slip around. They can cover the infield, but they can't cover the outfield. We played a game in St. Louis on the last day in which it had rained for two straight days. They got postponed the day before, and then they moved the game back from 12:45 to 6:15 because they had a forecast that showed it was going to stop around 6. Daggone if it didn't. I mean, they had a great forecast. It did stop, but they went out and played in miserable conditions, damp, cold. The field was soaked. And that was one of those situations, too, where it caused me to change my travel plans because I had booked a flight home that night after what I thought would be a day game. Instead, I spent the night over in St. Louis and came home the next day. So you always have to be aware of that. But, again, thank God we never have to worry about that at home. I know you hear all these, you know, comments from visiting writers when they come to Milwaukee and they play three games despite terrible weather outside, and they just say, oh, thank goodness, I didn't have to change my plans if the games got played. We don't have to try to come back here later in the year and play doubleheaders. It's just wonderful. And, you know, conspiracy theories aside with Carlos Torres, I think he's on to something that they should not have let anybody build a ballpark after the year 2000 that didn't have a roof on it. They just should have said, you got to have one. And just makes all the sense in the world. And you're going to make the money back, you know. You're just going to. I mean, I'm sure the Brewers have paid for their roof 10 times over with the attendance that they've drawn from being able to play games in climate control. Tonight, it's going to be good because of the temperature. It's like 40 degrees out. So if it's not the wetness, it can be the cold sometimes. And people, you know, they're not going to make it toasty in there, but they're going to make it comfortable in the 60s. And so dry in 60s is a pretty good way to play a baseball game.
Yeah, and it especially helps when you have a team like the Red Sox who's visiting for the first time in 14 years. You have fans, you know, from Boston or from, you know, around our area who, you know, want to come see the Red Sox for the first time at Miller Park, you know, in more than a decade, and they don't have to worry about it.
Yep. It's amazing that in modern scheduling, a team hasn't been to Milwaukee in 14 years. You know, the early days of interleague play, you played your corresponding division. So it was the NL Central versus the AL Central. And it went that way for years. And then people got bored with, you know, why do you always have to see the same American League team? So they started rotating the other divisions. And so over a course of a three-year period now, you'll play an interleague play the AL Central, the AL West, the AL East. But every time since 2003 that the AL East came around, the Brewers for some reason went to Boston and Boston didn't come here. And so it's just really interesting to see how much the lineups have changed in the 14. I mean, you go back and look at those box scores from when the Brewers played here, you see like Keith Ginters and Richie Sexsons and people like that. So it's been a long time. So I would think the Red Sox, you know, it's tough weekday nights before school's out, but I would think that there would be some interest in the Red Sox coming to town. Then we have the circus coming to town after them, the Mets.
A couple of with the Red Sox, it'll be interesting. I know I got a lot of tweets from Red Sox fans after Travis Shaw hit that homer like almost completely out of PNC Park the other day. And, you know, the Boston writers will probably stop by the Milwaukee clubhouse here today to talk to him and see what's going on with him, because I know they're having issues at third base in Boston. And, Tyler Thornburg's on the 60-day DL with Boston, so he's not making the trip. That would have been interesting to talk to him for the other perspective of that trade. But for right now, I would say the Brewers look like they got the better end of that deal, not only with Shaw, but, with Mauricio Dubon and Pennington, the pitcher who's hurt but still has some promise in the minor leagues for the Brewers.
You know, and Tom, you mentioned the circus coming to town with the Mets. They've been a wreck. You know, I'll be in town. I'll be at Miller Park on Sunday to see that madness firsthand. You know, so how do you expect, outside of the, you know, beginning with the Red Sox, how do you see this homestand going, considering the up and down nature of the Mets and the off field issues they're having?
Yeah, it's been no way to predict how the Brewers will do so far at home. They've played better on the road than at home. And certainly Boston is a challenge. And the Mets, they still have lots of good players. I guess they're going to face Matt Harvey this weekend, who was suspended over the weekend for playing golf and then coming down with a migraine during the round, and then not showing up for work the day before he's supposed to start. So, and you know, everybody knows about the Syndergaard injury thing, and Cespedes is injured, and you know, it's just they've just kind of been an ongoing soap opera. Days of Our Mets is kind of what's going on there. At least they're in a market where not much attention is drawn to them, right?
Oh, none at all, none. You know, so, you know, and then we can kind of project a little bit further out with the Brewers before we conclude and before we have our next podcast, which will be on May 23rd. But I wanted to ask Todd first, you know, every week he writes about the Brewers minor league report and what's going on in the minors. And I know that his next one is due out later today. So, Todd, how about you give us a preview of what we'll see later on JS Online as to what's going on in the Brewers minor league system?
Big week for Colorado Springs, 6-1, and really have been tearing the cover off the ball. The top four, hold on a second, I can look that up quick. Top four hitters in the minor league system for the Brewers this last week all were from Colorado Springs. Garrett Cooper hit 419, Eric Sogard 417, Von DeJesus 400, and Ryan Cordell 379. It just gives you an idea of how offensively talented this team is. They were, they won like 18-1 or something, I want to say, one game, and just have been crushing the ball. So I'll give folks a little bit, of course, by the time this gets out, it'll already be out, but Garrett Cooper is going to be the player of the week. And a Colorado Springs pitcher, Brandon Woodruff, is going to be the pitcher of the week. Both performed really well. And that bodes well, obviously, trying to look ahead a little bit for the Brewers. Maybe not so much Cooper because he's a first baseman and doesn't really have anywhere to play at this point, with the Brewers. But a guy like Brandon Woodruff, you have to think at some point this year, we're going to see in Milwaukee. He's off to a 5-0 start, great ERA, striking guys out. Really has pitched much better than Josh Hader, the Brewers' top pitching prospect. Hader's still kind of scuffling with his command, walking a lot of guys. So he's got some things to kind of fine-tune at Colorado Springs still. Looking beyond that, Isan Diaz is still hitting fairly well down in Carolina. Corey Ray, Lucas Erceg, kind of scuffling a little bit, but getting going. That's really what stands out to me at this point. It's interesting to note too, looking at the Wisconsin Timber Rattlers, they've got a few guys up there, Monte Harrison, Demi Ormoloy, Mario Feliciano, who are having good offensive years. So there's positives to be gained. There are positives to kind of glean from every level at this point. Again, it's still early. We're only about a little bit more than a month into the minor league season, so a lot can change, but some definite bright spots for them.
And to just toss in something on Woodruff, let's not forget he was their minor league pitcher of the year last year. So this guy's got a full head of steam now. You know, he did great last year. Now he's done great moving up to Colorado Springs, which, as we know, is a tough place for pitchers. So this guy is really profiling now as maybe the pitcher to watch in the whole organization. And as Todd said, we're probably going to see him up here at some point this year. And it's hard not to be excited about him. He's a big, strong, you know, bull of a pitcher, a very mentally tough kid. His brother was killed tragically in an ATV accident last year, and he came back the next few days and pitched a shutout and hit a home run in a 1-0 game. He basically won the game all by himself. And so there's a whole lot of reasons to be excited about Brandon Woodruff. I'm not sure the last pitcher that they had that had this much forward momentum to the major leagues to bounce off of a minor league pitcher of the year season to being brilliant for the first month in a tough place to pitch.
Yeah, and so, you know, as we look ahead at the Brewers, we have, as we mentioned, the three-game series against the Red Sox, three against the Mets. Then they'll go on the road for kind of a weird road trip, you know, with four games at San Diego before coming back to the Midwest for three games at Wrigley Field against the Cubs. I'm guessing you guys won't have to deal with very much rain in San Diego, and then you get the pleasure of going to Wrigley Field, as we've discussed on the podcast before. So with the Brewers sitting at 16-16 as of today, you know, how do you project the rest of that next road trip going, you know, with the way the Padres and the Cubs have been playing so far this season?
They had a bunch of rain in San Diego a few days ago, believe it or not. We were laughing about that because we were saying they probably don't even know where the tarp is in San Diego, or do they even have one? I'm taking that part of the road trip, and I would think that the Brewers are obviously, you don't want to look past anybody, but San Diego is not playing real well, and they're in the very early stages of a huge rebuild. So I would expect the Brewers to be competitive out there. Then they turn around and end that road trip in Chicago. And we all know how good the Cubs are and how the Brewers usually don't play well at Wrigley Field. So the end of the road trip is certainly going to be more challenging than the start of the road trip, I would think.
It's difficult to play two more disparate teams on one trip than the Padres and the Cubs. Like Todd said, the Padres, I don't know what rebuilding phase this is for them. They're permanently rebuilding their franchise, but they did strip down. They've got like three or four Rule 5 guys, including one from the Brewers. So when you're carrying that many Rule 5 guys, it shows that you don't expect to compete. And then you go, as Todd said, and play the team that has the most talent in the major leagues, probably. So, that is an interesting trip. Todd has San Diego, I have Chicago, so we'll see how that goes. It's the Brewers are 16-16, as you mentioned right now, and that's certainly not a win the pennant record, but it's probably better than a lot of people thought for them in the second year of their rebuild. So at least they've dug a competitive foothold where they show that on any given night they'll go out and compete. Especially if they get the pitching. So they're a very interesting team. I think Todd and I can both agree there's a lot of interesting things on this team. This is not a boring team because there's just so many interesting guys and different things going on with them, a lot of which we've talked about on the podcast today. So we can't complain that they're boring, can we, Todd?
We cannot. Definitely cannot.
Yeah, and before I let you guys go, I just wanted to ask how strange is it to have that afternoon game in San Diego before having another afternoon game in Chicago the next day? Obviously, you guys get to split that up, and you know the travel really doesn't affect how you cover it. But for the team, you know, you go from being on the West Coast to play an afternoon game to have to take a fairly lengthy flight to then play an afternoon game the next day.
Yeah, it's interesting. We were noting that the Brewers actually don't play another night game at Wrigley Field for the rest of the season. Every other game that they play down there this year is going to be a day game. So, with the charter travel and everything, the Brewers, they'll hop on their flight right away after the game in San Diego, head to Chicago. They'll lose those couple hours, but they'll be in town comfortably, assuming no delays in the early evening hours, and they'll be good to go the next day. The fact that Tom and I are splitting it up helps both of us, you know, if it were being covered by one guy, let's say I was having to get there on Friday, that might create a little bit of a strain or a little bit of a headache. I'd probably have to try to get out of town that Thursday night out of San Diego, whereas now I can just cover the game, not have to rush to the airport, and then get a flight out the next morning, which is what I'm going to do. So it's just part of the deal, I guess, when it comes to covering baseball and all that kind of stuff and being a beat guy.
There have been past years where San Diego did not give them a break of a day game on getaway day, or maybe it was like a late afternoon game, like 4 o'clock or something like that. And so, at least they're being a little more cooperative. Now, I think the CBA kind of, has made teams be a little more lenient on playing on getaway days. It's nothing worse than playing a night game on getaway day than having a long flight and playing a day game the next day. The guys are kind of like zombies the next day. So it's the only fair thing to do. And then, like Todd said, no more night games in Chicago. So at least if we don't have 5-hour rain delays, we should be able to make deadline.
Yeah.
That's always a plus for sure. So, all right, guys. Well, thanks for joining me today for this edition of the Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. Hopefully I can see you guys on Sunday when I'm at Miller Park. It should be a fun time. And for everybody listening, thank you for joining us today. As always, you can find the latest episodes on JS Online, as well as iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and the TuneIn app. Our next episode will be on May 23rd. So until then, keep following all of Tom and Todd's work on jsonline.com.